This morning I informed the Cabinet that I'll ask the President to dissolve the 32nd Dáil. I've always said that the election should happen at the best time for the country. Now is that time.
And therefore, if that is achieved, that you do have the possibility of creating greater growth in the society and creating better jobs.
Are we certain that we actually have the critical mass of public infrastructure and public service capacity to ensure that we can keep this golden goose that we have and that we can actually be the family that makes future generations better off?
Business at the ballot box. Be the voice.
And welcome back to Business at the Ballot Box, a daily general election podcast series brought to you by IBEC, the voice of Irish business. I'm Patrick Haughey, and in today's episode, we will be looking at a subject that may not be at the very, very top of the agenda in the candidate manifestos and on the doorsteps, but one that is critical to Ireland's future competitiveness and economic development, and that is the digital economy. At a time of incredible digital transformation globally, is Ireland doing everything it can to fully capitalise on the opportunities right in front of us right now? And if not, why not and how? Sean Moran of San Mina will join me for a short interview a little later in the episode. Among many other things, Sean is going to be telling me about his son Harry, who at the age of 12 became the world's youngest ever Mac app developer. And he tells me how Coder Dojo was central to nurturing Harry's skills and his ambition. But first, let's meet today's panel. I am joined by Liz McCarthy, Executive Director at Scale Ireland, Kieran McCurry, National Technology Officer at Microsoft Ireland, and Eric O'Donovan, Head of Digital Economy Policy at IBEC. You're all very welcome to Business at the Ballot Box, guys. Eric, I'm going to start with yourself, because when we hear the word digital, we could think of anything. It is just such a sort of a broad term and a broad area. So can you please lay out the focus of this discussion? Let us know what we're going to be covering.
Well, we'll be covering, I suppose, first of all, the importance of digital leadership and what that means, why it's important, and what we need to do to become digital leaders globally. So I suppose digital leadership is, why is it important? It's about holding our competitive position. It's about seizing new opportunities. It's about creating smarter products and services. And these emerging technologies are agile. And with this agile technology, we need an agile response.
And have we not had that to date? Because I think Ireland likes to think of itself as a very digital economy and a very digital country, and maybe that's due to the fact that we have so many of the world's top technology companies right here, based here with their EMEA operations and beyond. But are we leaders in digital and digital development, or are we a little bit further down the ranks than we should be?
Well, we're ranked seventh by the European Union in terms of our economic and societal development digitally. But there are gaps in that, such as in areas like skills and infrastructure that are to be filled. So there currently is about 210,000 people employed in the digitally intensive sectors here in Ireland, and they account for about 26% of our exports. But there's a huge economic opportunity here that could be seized across the economy, with 140,000 net jobs potentially, and we could add 27 billion euros to the economy. So what this is really about is, it's not just about the technology sector per se, it's about how that technology can be adopted in other areas of our economy, in public services, healthcare, environmental monitoring, transport, that can enhance economic benefits and societal welfare.
And lastly with you, Eric, there's a sense of urgency to this as well, because other countries are really, really putting a lot of money and time and investment and energy into this area.
Absolutely. We're seeing not only just competition from Asia in this area, but also from other digital front runners. So Ireland would be ranked as a digital front runner in Europe. A lot of the countries in Northern Europe would be seen as being digitally advanced. So this is kind of, it's not just about our current level, it's the momentum. So it's the level and pace at which we are developing as a digitalized economy.
Kieran McCarry, National Technology Officer of Microsoft Ireland. Your own thoughts on what Eric has just said.
So Eric used the phrase digital leadership a few times. I think that's the big challenge for us now, to be honest. I think Ireland has done a reasonable job, a pretty good job, in fact, of keeping its game quite solid around digital technology. But there is an inflection point ahead of us just at the moment. And you mentioned a second ago about the degree of investment from other countries, especially in Europe, with respect to new technologies. France has a 1.5 billion euro fund for AI. Germany, 2 billion euros allocated to it. It's a real opportunity for us in Ireland to step up in that space. And I suppose if you look at the enabling technologies for things like artificial intelligence, you have to look at public cloud consumption. I think we can do a better job at that. That's a great environment and ecosystem for other companies, for startups, for SMEs to build on top of that platform. We talk about this, you hear this number being floated about quite a lot, that 30% or 40% of all of Europe's data is resident here in Ireland. I think we also need to up our game with cybersecurity. Just on the 27th of December, I think it was, the new national strategy for cybersecurity was published. We really need to give effect to that. We need to do more in terms of making that real and to look at better protection for the national critical infrastructure using cybersecurity technology also. So in summary, I think there's opportunity ahead and we need to grasp it.
Well, let's just dive into one of those areas that you mentioned, artificial intelligence, because I know it's a little bit old at this stage, but you, Microsoft Ireland had a report in relation to artificial intelligence, AI, and how much the government of Ireland and Ireland is taking advantage of this technology in terms of adoption and leveraging it. Can you tell us a little bit about that report and maybe if you think things have changed or have we got better?
So the report dates back, I think it's October 2018, so it was Microsoft in conjunction with EY. The high-level findings from that report were that about 65% of companies surveyed, it was across Europe, I think it was about 270, 280 companies surveyed, but about 65% of those companies felt that AI was going to be really critical to the success of their business. Higher than that, I think it was 80% had indicated that it was probably going to dramatically transform their business, but the findings were only that about 4% of companies were actually actively doing anything about it. And when you compared that across Europe with respect to Ireland, Ireland was a bit of a laggard in terms of adoption of AI technology. You asked me, has anything changed in relation to that? And the answer is, unfortunately, I don't think it has. Our sense, and I suspect if you talk to anyone that operates in this space, is that there really hasn't been much of an uptick in terms of grasping the opportunities that AI is going to bring. But we probably see a little bit more of it in the private commercial sector, but I think there's a real lack of the recognition of what AI can bring from the public sector, from government especially. I think that's unfortunate. I think there's a great opportunity there.
Liz McCarthy of Scale Ireland. Firstly, tell us a little bit about Scale Ireland and what you guys do.
So Scale Ireland is a representative organisation representing high-growth entrepreneurs right across the country. We've evolved out of the startup community where we identified there was a gap in terms of representation of those types of businesses. And we've been speaking to government over the years, and we really needed to have more coherence in terms of representing what was going on the ground and also advocating for change and policies that could better support those types of businesses.
And your thoughts then, this is obviously a very pertinent discussion because a lot of the startups and the scale-ups we are seeing are leveraging digital technologies and they need the infrastructure and they need the ability to do that. So what are your thoughts from that perspective?
Absolutely. So startups, I might just start by really specifying what a startup is as distinct from an SME. So in terms of government policy, it's been widely accepted that the indigenous business sector definitely needs a bit more focus from a government perspective and to help complement the level of FDI investment we've had. But within the indigenous sector, there are different types of businesses, one of which is a startup. So that's really a high growth company that's very much has innovation at its core. typically these firms invest heavily in innovation at the outset, which means their cash flow can be quite negative for a good period of time. They need a very specific policy response to enable them to get through that journey and to get out the other side and to scale and grow. Some of the things that we've been advocating for around tax changes, for example, but beyond that, infrastructural changes that we mentioned previously, things like STEM education, all those different ingredients that are critical for a business to grow. So as part of that, we've actually voiced those concerns and that call to government within an open letter, which we published last week. We've had around 300 signatories in just a course of 5 days, really rapid take up from entrepreneurs right across the country, regional areas and in the cities, really calling on government to really pay more attention to this part of the economy.
And people like Des Traynor of Intercom and Peter Coppinger of Teamwork have all sort of thrown their weight behind it. And that's very significant weight. They're very significant names.
Yes. I think importantly for us, we're trying to communicate that this is not an urban issue. This is beyond the cities. These types of entrepreneurs are providing high value employment, quite sticky employment in rural areas and regional towns. It's a really important part of the overall national strategy is to really bring economic opportunities out into rural areas. And we believe that there's a real opportunity on our doorstep to unlock the kind of ingredients that we have in place and really turn that into a major advantage. And we are becoming a laggard now in the startup space. Again, we've mentioned France and Germany, what they're doing in the startup space. They're having really ambitious measures because they see this as a huge area of future opportunity. And we believe the Irish government has done an amazing job on various parts of enterprise policy in the past. And we believe that if they just paid their attention to this, we can really reap the rewards in the coming years.
Eric, is there any examples of where the Irish government has done really well in this area?
Yeah, I think we're doing quite well from the point of view that we're ranked seventh. And we're doing quite well from the point of view that we'd be ranked number one in terms of by the European Union in terms of integration of digital technology. Where it begins to kind of, where there's more work to be done is when you look closer into the figures, it's how much adoption is happening between the SMEs versus the larger firms is the issue, right? So something that the OECD has kind of pointed out, that the smaller firms need a lot more help, I suppose, in digital integration. And I'm talking not just, say, startups, but also your average SME. So there's kind of help in this. And because this cuts across the economy, what we really need, I suppose, is kind of high-level political commitment on it, which we've had. But the technology is moving on and there's new rules coming down the track from Europe. And we just have to adjust our policy settings to be prepared for these new EU rules, because there'll be new EU rules around digital services, there'll be new EU rules around AI. And our national digital strategy dates back to 2013, so it's quite narrow and outdated. And it is promised, but I suppose in a new programme for government, we'd like to see that reflected in the new programme for government, that there's a commitment that simply says that digital technology can be used to enable economic benefits and societal benefits, and reflecting that desire in a new national digital strategy, almost like a new roadmap that we can all follow, both government, public services and private sector and individuals, because it is about people really at the end of the day. It's about enabling people. And so those roadmaps, but what I think where we're doing, where we could do more is we have something like about six different departments dealing with six different aspects of digital policy. Now that's important and they're doing a good positive job, but they're discrete parcels. What's probably needed is coordination, and that's our view, that we would probably need a dedicated minister of state in this area, or it could be a super junior minister, but essentially a dedicated minister for digital affairs that's able to pull these different strands together in a coherent whole of government approach that is engaging with business. In other countries, say Denmark and the UK, there is groups like the Digital Growth Panel, Digital Economy Advisory Council. And what this is about is bringing people together. Danny has talked, our CEO, Danny McCoy, has talked about, dialogue as a means to address very complex, knotty policy problems. And that's what we're talking about here. It's bringing together startups. It's bringing together bigger companies, SMEs. And it's how do we use these digital tools to enable these economic benefits that
And I think that that's the opportunity that the government has, or a new government will have in front of itself. It's to reinforce Eric's point about the fragmentation that we've seen. Great initiatives across different government departments and great ambition, but the lack of, I think you used the word coordination, or common purpose around them has, I think, hindered and frustrated some of the advances they could have made. So there's an opportunity ahead of us now to coordinate those efforts, and really have the government demonstrate a leadership opportunity here. Now, Eric mentioned about, you know, some kind of ministerial position to drive that. I think that's a great idea. What I would say is that a figurehead doing that isn't just enough. You know, if we've got some kind of minister in position to coordinate and drive all of these digital transformation activities across government, he or she needs to have some teeth or power or commitment, you know, either a carrot or a stick, in order to make sure that the various initiatives that are currently in existence do get better aligned and more joined up.
I think that brings nicely to the point of, for all of us sitting here, we're very much interested in engaging with government, having a constructive relationship and making sure that that facilitation occurs and that there's real engagement and partnership. For example, from our perspective in terms of startups, they can very much help be a solution provider in this space. There are schemes in place already. So the SBIR scheme, for example, Small Business Innovation process, that is a something that exists, but we'll be calling on that to be expanded. So this is where you don't have to start from scratch, but it's really pay more political attention to this, engage with the private sector and really make use of that information innovation that's on the doorstep.
And some of the initiatives actually that the government have put in place, they're really pointing in the right direction, just to reinforce that point about the DTIF, Disruptive Technologies Innovation Fund, you know, some of the initiatives around GovTech and that whole ecosystem and framework. So it's good guidance and it's the right trajectory, but I still think there's more to do and there's more effort to be put in place.
Kieran, Eric mentioned there a moment ago that this is all about people. And what I haven't asked you guys is for an example of something that really grounds what we're talking about here in relation to how has the adoption of digital technology made the lives of citizens or public services or whatever that might be better. Can you think of an example that comes top of mind, Kieran? I'll start with you.
Well, you know, everyone's used to mobile applications and apps on their devices and the kind of immediacy in terms of using apps. I think we need to see more of that in terms of public services. There have been great developments there already. I mean, look at how you apply for or renew your passport these days and how much simpler that is today versus how it was 5 years ago. So there are examples and demonstrations of digital transformation in the provision of citizen services that have already brought benefit to people. There's a whole raft of different opportunities where we could do an even better job.
Something that comes to mind for me is the Grow Remote movement. So as distinct from government putting in place and driving the way, that was very much a grassroots-led movement of people, individuals, communities living in rural areas, really putting up the flag and saying, we are working remotely, we're working for a large tech company or working in services, and we're working from home or working from a hub, and really driving that community aspect. And again, that's where community is so important. This technology isn't without a home. It's related to individuals and individuals making action. And Grow Remote is really has drawn attention to this space of the amount of remote working opportunities that can be fostered and promoted right across the country.
And look at Shopify, fantastic example, like great workforce in Ireland, none of them in an office, a central office. And these are really good. It's really interesting to see how this whole area is growing. I did an interview with John Reardon of Shopify recently. He's firmly convinced this is the future model and it's going to be attractive. It's going to help with talent acquisition in a huge way. And it's really going that direction.
But again, for those people, it can be quite isolating if you're working remotely. Yeah. So it's being able to be part of a community and connect with other people that can identify with you, maybe not in the same company, but have a similar sort of work lifestyle, and having that connection is so important.
Eric, an example from yourself?
Well, for me, I think it's some of the stuff that's coming out in the area of healthcare, where you see UCD and Matter and Decifix and IBM getting together doing projects where they're helping surgeons using AI techniques to identify cancer tissue, so to target better medical outcomes. Also, the Infant Centre down in the UCC, who are again using AI techniques to detect seizures in newborns and therefore early treatment, better outcomes. It's amazing stuff. Like, markets. But there's another one that really has grabbed my imagination. It's kind of a almost Paddy's in Space type technology, where Ubotica, who's their technology firm, who working with Yalico, a DCU based company, have got together with the European Space Agency. And again, they're using AI techniques in vision processing in satellites. And essentially, they're screening out unwanted images, cloud cover, in looking at environmental monitoring. So therefore, they can detect something like a forest fire faster, and therefore faster response. But it's just amazing. Science fiction does come true.
It does, when you've got the frameworks in place to allow it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, guys, stay with me for a couple of moments. We're now going to hear from Sean Moran, who's Vice President of Operations at San Mina in Fermoy, a company that employs about 500 people, very involved in the sector of medtech and manufacturing around medtech. Sean is talking to me about the importance of working for a strongly purpose-driven company, but also how Coder Dojo helped his son Harry become the youngest Mac app developer in the world.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.
San Mina is a global integrated manufacturing solutions company, headquartered in San Jose, founded in 1980, with 46,000 employees in 75 different facilities around the world. And we're primarily involved in the providing of manufacturing solutions to many of the leading branded companies, particularly in the medical device space in Ireland and worldwide.
Which is an incredible space in Ireland.
It is, yeah. And, our strap line is what we make makes a difference. And, every day there's 1.5 million patients served by products that we make in San Mina and Fermoy.
No, that's for a company like yours, it's a very strong sort of mission statement, I suppose. It's very simple, but it's very strong. And do you think that actually has a very tangible impact on your teams, on your workforce?
Certainly does. Yeah, I think, people are very proud of what they do. We support many of the leading medical device companies in the world. And also we bring that back to working with our customers to bring their patients on board and to talk to our staff. Because when you're on the early morning shift on a Saturday morning, you may be making many of these devices, but at the end of the day, there's a patient at the end of every device. So you're serving somebody and assisting somebody and enhancing their lives or enabling their lives on a daily basis, whatever time you're making that. And we operate on a 24/7 basis. So I think to connect that there's a patient at the end of what we're manufacturing is very important, and really people are very proud of the difference that we make.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to talk about your son, Harry, who is a very, very interesting guy and someone who, before we even just met today, I had been aware of through reading about him over the last few years at various times in various publications. Would you like to just tell us a bit about Harry?
Well Harry got, a lot of publicity when he was quite young. At the age of 12, he developed a PizzaBot app, he was the youngest Mac app developer worldwide at that stage. So Harry spoke on NPR and on Thanksgiving Day, and was on the BBC World Service on Thanksgiving Day, and was interviewed and got a lot of publicity. But I suppose Harry started in the very first Coder Dojo. So we were involved in Coder Dojo Zero, and he always had an interest in technology, but through Coder Dojo, he found his runway and was able to take off. And within a few weeks, he was programming significantly, and then took the opportunity to say, okay, well, he went and did this. He didn't even tell us what he was doing, and then he had I'm ready to launch. I remember being over in Germany at a medtech conference, and I got a call from my brother and said, I'm just after hearing your son Harry on Today FM with Dean Dempsey because of what he's done. And so he's had that was a great launch for him, but he's always been involved in that. He's been heavily involved in Coder Dojo, as have my other son has been involved as well. And then he kept working on that, was heavily involved in Vex Robotics. Young scientist, he was involved in the BT Young Scientist and Technology exhibition for a number of years, won several awards in that, and has always kept his interests alight in that. So he was, when he was in his leaving cert year, he was looking at what he was going to do and where he was going to apply for college. Something in the computer science stuff area was going to be his attraction. And he said, look, I'd like to look at a global approach in this. So had a look at it, and he went and did his US SATs. And then, you know, the places like Stanford, MIT were the areas that were attractive to him. And also, they were good enough to be able to they were the ones that could provide international scholarships as well. So thankfully, one of those came up, and he's currently in his second year in Stanford. But things like the transition year system worked really well for Harry, because you get a real experience if you utilize it properly. And Harry spent a month working with a software company in the Silicon Docks in London during this transition year. He worked with several other companies, so he got real experience. He was about probably 12 weeks out of school, and really benefited from getting an insight into what did he want to do. So he's continued to work away on different projects for himself. As I said, he had, I think, three projects and three award-winning projects in the BT Young Scientist over the years. He's worked with various different other startups in supporting them through their development as well. So he's enjoying what he's doing, and he, I suppose the whole trajectory from those early days, and when we went first to Koto Dojo, there was probably three, four kids. And Harry, I remember at one stage, was putting up posters around the school and around the areas because he thought it was going to close down. But thankfully, it's gone from strength to strength, and I think there's over 1,500 dojos around the world now, and all started out of Cork in Ireland.
But that's brilliant. But does that mean, so is Ireland a good place? Is it a nurturing place for people with an interest in technology and that kind of thing, like Harry?
I think it is very much more so now, because you know there are formal structures that help greatly, but also the informal structures, things like the Koto Dojo, have added an awful lot to that ecosystem. And there's a very much positive drive from many of the multinationals and indigenous companies to support youngsters, young boys and girls, to have a real interest in technology, because many of those will be those technologists that we will be depending on in the future. And a lot of the businesses within Ireland are very, very supportive and very engaging in enabling that happen.
IBEC, the voice of Irish business.
What a fascinating story. Sean Moran, VP of Operations at San Mina in Fermoy. Kieran McGarry, National Technology Officer at Microsoft Ireland. You were listening with interest there. Some points you'd like to pick up on?
It really hits home with me. I think it's a wonderful example of the value that you can bring when you empower a child to do something, and you give them the tools and the knowledge and the technology to make them more successful. It's something we feel very passionate about within Microsoft. We have a Dream Space program where our ambition is to engage with 100,000 children in school over 4 years to give them a greater exposure to STEM-related subjects, to technology, to robotics, to AI, to design thinking. So a whole variety of different things, both at primary school and secondary school level, and also to engage with the teachers, because they're key to all of this. I mean, you can provide some exposure to technology to children if you do it for a while. That's great, but if you don't follow it up with a change in the way that they're taught and educated, it really has a diminished effect. So something we feel very strongly and passionately about, and you know, it's a major program for us.
Liz?
Yeah, I've had the happy experience of observing various Koto Dojos and working alongside the HQ here in Dublin, and they're an amazing organization, really enabling children of all backgrounds to really understand what coding is like and really get a love from it from an early age. I suppose from our perspective, for sure, STEM talent is something that is on our radar and is impacting on companies of all sizes. And that's a case of questioning the pipeline. It's encouraging children from an early age, encouraging diversity, but there's also getting people into that workforce at a later stage. And something that we're really interested in promoting is enabling people who might have gone down a different career path to adjust and to transfer into coding. So for example, apprenticeships or coding boot camps are solutions that are used elsewhere. And something that we're looking at is distributed training, where really enabling people to transform into a developer through training within a startup or within a tech company, working within the environment and working alongside other coders is the quickest way of becoming a really skilled developer for working in industry. And that's something that we think could be, there could be really innovative solutions to this talent pipeline issue here in Ireland.
And Eric, as this pipeline starts to fill up and people come out the other side, they need to have opportunities to allow them to actually put those skills to work, which ties into exactly what IBEC is calling for here.
Yes, absolutely. I thought it was an inspirational story, and it is a question of making sure that the supply matches up with the demand. I mean, there was something like a 71% increase, I think, in demand in the 4 years up to 2018 in terms of looking for ICT graduates. So the story is inspirational, and it just reinforces the need, you know, to implement the ICT Skills Action Plan and for to have those education options and alternative pathways into digital schools or digital skills, I beg your pardon. But one thing that just occurs to me, that's kind of the pipeline issue. There is also another aspect to digital education and digital skills, which is the idea of lifelong learning. Because as technology emerges, new tasks come on stream, new skills are needed. So it's a case of we're going to have to upskill and reskill the existing workforce as well. So a challenge that we're facing is that lifelong learning levels are half of what the EU are really saying where we need to be. So I think that's a challenge that we need to address is to increase the level of lifelong learning.
And you mentioned that piece of research that we did back in 2018 around AI. And one of the findings that came out of that was the pace of change of technology was a real challenge for companies to deal with. And that translates into the skills that people need in employment and how they're developed. So that's something we need to be very focused on.
And I think the pace of change of technology is also something that society and you and I have actually been struggling to keep up with as well. And that brings up the issue of trust and how comfortable people are with digital technologies and how much they trust them around the security of their data and the privacy. So is that a hurdle that has yet that we still need to tackle to jump over in order to really reach the potential of Ireland as a digital country?
Well, I think we're getting over it, to be honest. I think there has been, maybe this is too dark a way to describe it, but a sort of a black patch in terms of trust. But I think in terms of things like government services and how companies are using technology today to optimize their business processes, to be more efficient, to be more effective, looking at technologies such as AI, its use of big data, public cloud, hyperscale cloud, those kind of things, I think we're at the point now where the investment that companies are making in those platforms, especially with regard to privacy and security and essentially trust, is really starting to improve matters.
And it's probably a generational thing as well. You know, I guess the younger the generation, the younger the person, the more conditioned and the more sort of native they are to this area, Liz.
Yes, absolutely. Something that comes to mind is my mother will not make any payments online. So I don't know, is she representative of the broader Irish population? But for sure, we're seeing younger people they're digital natives. They're much more comfortable with sharing all types of data online. And I believe that level of trust is there. And maybe it isn't. Maybe it's a lack of questioning of whether they should even have trust or not. It's just an accepted that you share your information online.
Can I just say in relation to that point, because it raises a really interesting question about accessibility and inclusiveness. You can't just march headlong into a high-tech technology solution to allow faster payments or using your mobile phone. You have to come up with a platform that's open for everyone. I don't know what age your mother is, but you know, in terms of making sure that everyone feels comfortable with the technology and the platform. So this is one of the challenges that especially the government has with regard to citizen services. How do you make them available and attractive to all?
Yeah, so user experience is core to all of this. Okay, before we wrap up, Eric, I want to come back to you just to sort of maybe look at some final messages, calls to action for the next government, things that we'd like to leave the listeners with in terms of priorities and actions here.
Well, for me, it's two things. It's policy coordination, and it's about building capacities for our government, public services, businesses, big and small, to actually adopt digital tools and succeed. And what I'm talking about here is high-level political continue a high-level political commitment in this area, deliver roadmaps in essential areas such as artificial intelligence, and more importantly, the overarching national digital strategy, and set up an umbrella framework that is pulling together these different departments in to deliver these roadmaps in a kind of coherent way. And most important of all for us is a dedicated minister for digital affairs that's able to lead the charge and pull together the various different departments with a shared ambition, a shared vision, and to engage with our partners in Europe.
Liz, final word from yourself?
For us, it's a case of having a nuanced approach to understanding how to support the Indigenous economy. For sure, support SMEs, they're a critical part of the overall economy. But within that, understand the growth journey of startups, high-tech startups, understand the value that they bring, and really introduce a coherent policy framework that will enable them to scale and to succeed.
And Kieran?
I think it is all about the policy framework. As both Liz and Eric have mentioned, for us from a Microsoft perspective, we see three elements that are really key to that in terms of usage of the cloud, digitally transforming to cloud services, really leveraging artificial intelligence, but doing so against the backdrop of solid cybersecurity practices and all underpinned by good focus on skills and skills development.
Kieran McCarry, National Technology Officer at Microsoft Ireland, Liz McCarthy, Executive Director at Scale Ireland, and Eric O'Donovan, Head of Digital Economy Policy here at IBEC. Thank you very much for joining us on Business at the Ballot Box today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is it for today's episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. And if you'd like to join the conversation on Twitter and LinkedIn, please use the hashtag BeTheVoice. And you can also email us at ibecpodcasts@ibec.ie. And of course, please do follow us or subscribe to Business at the Ballot Box wherever you get your podcasts, if you are enjoying the series, because then you will never miss an episode. It'll drop straight into your inbox. In the next episode of Business at the Ballot Box, we will be exploring the future of education in Ireland in the company of Jim Miley of the Irish Universities Association, Lorna Fitzpatrick, Union of Students in Ireland, Alistair Blair of Accenture, and Claire McGee here in IBEC. Hope you can join us then.
Business at the Ballot Box. Be the voice.